Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 32 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life. Now, today we're going to be talking about, good grief, female sexual dysfunction. This is a hot topic, to say the least, in more ways than one. Yeah, you heard me right. Hey, but before we start the episode, I just want to make sure you know this specific episode is made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to please, please, please hop on over to iTunes after our episode and rate the podcast. And heck, while you're there, review us. We really, really love to hear from you and welcome your thoughts. All right, it's time for Her.
Her. The podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about her.
Now, on this episode, we're very excited to have Dr. Lea Milhauser. Now, she is a top-level expert in the entire field, the sector of female sexual dysfunction. She's a clinical assistant professor and the director of the Female Sexual Medicine Program in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Stanford University Medical Center. That's pretty cool stuff. She has also dedicated her career to looking at this entire issue of women's sexual health. She served as the education chair for the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health and was a past member of the Society's board of directors. She also has her own practice, really looking at you out there, all of you participants and listeners of Her, the podcast. That's that. That means that Dr. Milhauser really understands how to be able to talk to you in terms that make sense to you. Because you know something? It's a sensitive and touchy subject. So Dr. Milhauser, welcome to Her, the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me and for dedicating this program to such an important issue that affects so many women in this country.
Oh, heck yeah. All right. So there was a national survey that took place. I know that you're going to be talking about, and it had some pretty striking findings. 48% of premenopausal women, that means age 21 to 49, say their sex drive is lower now than in the past. 93% of women believe that having low sexual desire can put a strain on their relationship. Amen. 46% of women currently in a relationship feel that low sexual desire is putting their relationship at risk. 81% of women in a relationship admit to having sex with a partner, even if they are not in the mood. I call that mercy sex. Just kind of get in there and just, oh, you know, the heck with it. Yeah, we'll do it, whatever. No matter what's going on in your head and your body, 77% of women believe there needs to be more open, honest discussions about women's low sexual desire. You know, and this is all the way from just talking to your primary care provider to what's going on in the news media. And 67% of women are worried that low sexual desire in women isn't taken seriously. And guess what? Only 14% of women are aware of the availability of treatments for low sex drive and desire. Wow. Okay. So, you know, with that as a context, describe what this female sexual dysfunction really is. What is it? How do you define it?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So, you know, before I sort of get into that, I just want to say the statistics that you just pointed out, we've seen this in studies from the past. And it really, I love that Asha did this survey. And the reason is because the more we get this information out there of how common sexual concerns are and how low sexual interest impacts a woman's life, the more likely a woman, especially somebody listening today, will go to their clinician and say, hey, I've got this issue and I need to talk about it. So I'm so glad that you pointed out the statistics, and I'm sure we'll get to sort of delving into them a little bit more. But female sexual dysfunction is a disorder where a woman has a sexual concern, and that concern can be low sexual desire, difficulty achieving orgasm, or orgasm isn't as strong as it used to be, difficulty with sexual arousal, and then, of course, pain disorder. So painful intercourse, not even being able to engage because even attempting is painful. So there are four different disorders that fit into this bucket of female sexual dysfunction. Now, just to have a complaint, so if I came to you, you're my doctor, and I come to you and I say, Dr. Peek, I've got, you know, no interest in sex, and it's been going on for, you know, a couple of months, you wouldn't say to me, well, Leah, you've got female sexual dysfunction. The key distinguisher here, so what we really need to figure out is whether or not my complaint is associated with personal distress. Does my complaint bother me? If it does bother me, if it's a persistent problem and it's causing me just, it really causes me distress, it's affecting my life and my relationship, and it's been going on for at least 6 months, then, and it's not caused by a medication I'm taking or relationship issues or anything else. I mean, this is just a problem that sort of came out of the blue, especially when we're talking about low sex drive. Then you do meet criteria for, in this case, hypoactive sexual desire disorder. So the difference between just a sexual concern and female sexual dysfunction is how long the problem's been going on for. So at least 6 months or more, it's a chronic problem, and it's associated with distress.
Huh. Okay. So let's delve into each one of these a little bit. You know, as a physician myself, if a woman comes to me with, you know, those kinds of thoughts, you know, it's like I'm having the low libido and I'm not aroused easily at all, and I'm not really enjoying life here at all. You know what I bet a lot of physicians think? You're depressed. You're, mm-hmm. you know, you're distracted. You're stressed out. That's really all it is. How many, you know, physicians out there do you think are kind of sending women home with, you know, why don't you meditate through it and, you know, really start looking at stress management and all the rest of it? Clearly, all of those things are impact upon women's sexual health. But I think that the grand majority of physicians are unaware of going much deeper into this real problem, a real physiologic, it's psychobiological problem that women have with low sexual interest.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. So, you know, if I had a dollar for every patient, and again, my clinic is purely sexual dysfunction and menopause, but if I had a dollar for every woman who came in and said, my doctor told me to go home and have a glass of wine and relax. My doctor told me
exactly.
to meditate.
Now we're talking.
My doctor told me, now we're talking. My doctor told me to go out on more date nights. I want to preface this with, when a woman truly has sexual dysfunction, simply sort of dismissing it as you just need to relax is insulting. And it's demeaning to the woman who, A, has probably tried all of those things. And if she's coming to you and saying, I have this concern, it's most likely based on research that we've seen, it's probably been going on for a really long time. We've done research that actually shows that women typically takes them about 6 months to disclose that they have a sexual concern. So they've tried all of these things. Now, unfortunately, it's not the fault of the doctor. It's actually the fault of the medical system. And you and I went through medical school probably at a time where female sexual dysfunction wasn't taught. I had 1 hour of sexual medicine, so to speak, education. I went to Northwestern Medical School, fantastic medical school. But at the time, Viagra had just come out, and all of the education was focused on male sexual dysfunction. We have a really good understanding of what causes it. It's a blood flow issue. And I'll tell you, I had about 20 minutes max on women, which was, we really don't understand all the causes of sexual dysfunction in women, but we know that a lot of it is psychological. We always talk about relaxation, drinking wine, and that's what I was educated. That's what I was told in medical school and residency. I heard it all the time. You need to relax, drink wine, go on a vacation. That's not the answer for a woman who's got sexual dysfunction, because we know that there are biological roots to this problem. So, for example, HSDD, hypoactive sexual desire disorder, which is low libido, the sexual dysfunction that encompasses low libido, we know that that is a problem with an imbalance of your dopamine and norepinephrine levels in your brain. And we've seen that. I did the study at Stanford. Women with low sex drive who have sexual dysfunction, their brains respond differently to sexually arousing images compared to healthy women. And it all has to do with this area of the brain called the limbic system. And again, showing you that there's this imbalance of these two neurotransmitters in the brain. So, and those neurotransmitters are associated with arousal and desire. So again, very important for all of us, whether we're clinicians or lay people who aren't in the medical industry, that there is a biological basis to low sex drive in women. Same thing goes for sexual arousal disorder, which we know that, by the way, if a woman has one sexual dysfunction, like low sex drive, what's going to happen? There's going to be this cascade. If you don't have a strong sex drive, you're going to have difficulty achieving genital arousal, lubrication, engorgement, all of those things that signal healthy sexual response, which will then set you up for difficulty achieving orgasm. So it has this downward sort of effect, this downward spiral effect that happens. So we know that all of these are based in biology as well. Now, we are different from men, and I always bring this up. If you take a healthy man and you
well, that was thrilling.
Wasn't that good? 15 years of being in this field, and I've learned one thing: we are different from men. I will say that if you take a healthy man and you put him in a war zone with bombs coming down around him, most likely he will be able to develop sex drive if put in that situation. Take that same woman, put her in that situation, the last thing she's thinking about is sex. Women are more what we call sexually plastic, it's kind of a funny phrase, than men are. We are much more impacted by our society, environment, stressors than men are when it comes to sexual function. That's no surprise. So yes, there is certainly, with women who have a sexual concern, the emotional aspect, the relationship aspect, the stressors of your job, your kids, fatigue, we're multitaskers. That is one side of it. But the other side of it is the biologic side. And that's where we as clinicians have to come together and understand there's a biological basis. There's also a psychological basis. We have to address all of them. We can't dismiss it as just being you're tired and stressed, your relationship needs work.
Well, you know, again, your points are absolutely golden. What I'm thinking about is, you know, that plasticity that you brought up about, you know, women being so different than men. You know, when a woman is going through the perimenopause, for instance, which is literally a war zone when you think about it. Oh my gosh. I mean, there's so much going on. There may be career changes, stresses with relationships, children who don't want to leave home, children who boomerang back at you. And then all of a sudden we're caregiving parents. And at the same time, where all that's going on, we're also going through a hormonal tsunami of changes, which are gradual. It's sort of what I love to call hormonal creep. It's just sort of one day you wake up, and, you know, my specialty is looking at body fat and body composition changes that happen through the perimenopause, menopause. One day you wake up and instead of being an hourglass shape, you're a shot glass shape, and you just don't understand, you know, what could have happened? I mean, wait a minute. And I think when all of this is going on and a woman is shape-shifting, and I bring that up because so many women gain a boatload of weight during perimenopause for a lot of the reasons I already mentioned, that their interest in sex, their sexual health per se, I think takes a real hammering because their body image and their self-image and their self-confidence may be plummeting. and that's a huge problem. While all this other stuff is going on, and as you said, because we have this plasticity, how in the heaven can we possibly parse all of this out to make sense of the physiologic end of this?
Yeah, that's a great, you bring up such a great point. I think, you know, my, in addition to sexual medicine, my focus is on menopausal health. And, you know, I have women coming in their, you know, early to mid 40s who are experiencing sort of the start of menopause. They're getting a preview, but they're still having monthly periods. They're noticing it's hard to lose weight. They're noticing weight gain in places they never had it before. You know, sexual drive is starting to go down. And a big, in this day and age where we're so focused on appearance, you know, the days I always, whenever I give lectures, I always show a picture of what menopausal women were when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s. And I always think of the wife from All in the Family, right? She was a housewife and, you know, appearance wasn't a big deal. And then you fast forward and, you know, there's Sex and the City and Samantha, and she's sort of the face of the new menopausal woman who's working and she's vibrant and she wants to look beautiful. And that's where we are now. And it's a fight. And it's something that women, you know, across the country, they find it so important to feel good, to look good. They want to look good for their partners. They want to look good for themselves. And to tackle that on top of tackling what your body wants to do naturally, you're fighting nature. And if you think about women, and I actually love thinking about it in this regard, go back to our caveman days. Think about our ancestors. Men were meant to make sure that the human species survived by spreading their seed, having as many children as they could. It's survival of the fittest, just keep producing so that the species goes on. Women at some point developed menopause. And as far as recorded history goes back, it's around the age of 51 if you live that long. And the reason probably had something to do with women would die in childbirth at some age, especially if they were older, and they would leave children to fend for themselves. So you would probably not have, you know, this continuation of that line of the family. So women were probably developed menopause. There's this theory called the grandmother theory to take care of the future generations while the men went out and again, sort of spread the seed. So fast forward to today, women go through menopause at 51. You're no longer able to procreate. We are at the end of the day animals. So if you're not meant to procreate, why have a libido? Libido for the most part in most species is meant for procreation. Now we are intellectual beings. We cohabitate, we marry, we're in partnerships, we want to continue. Our intellect tells us intimacy is important. We want to continue being sexually intimate with our partner. It's important to our partner. Many women feel that if they are not sexually intimate with their male partner, that partner may leave them. So of course, there's this fear, and you saw this in the survey that was part of the Find My Spark campaign, which is basically women fear for the health of their relationship. They feel that their relationships are at risk if they are not sexually intimate. So we're fighting nature, and there are ways to do this. But I would say the most important step that a woman can take, in addition to, of course, talking to her friends, because we all talk about this with our friends, is to talk to your doctor. If your doctor's not asking you about how your weight gain is affecting the way you feel about yourself, and how the way you feel about yourself is affecting your sex drive, and how menopause is affecting your sex drive, it's important for you to bring it up. Doctors don't always have it, and you and I know this. We have so much to get through in a 12 to 15 minute visit, for some of us even shorter than that, that sexuality isn't always at the forefront. So we forget, or we just don't feel like we're educated enough in it, depending on our field.
Or we feel really bad about ourselves and are embarrassed. And I think it's a generational thing too. I mean, how many women who are 60 plus, you know, feel really comfortable about just sort of letting it hang out there about your sexuality? I think that that's tough. Whereas, you know, if you talk to a 20-year-old, they're like, you know, letting it rip most of the time. I think that there's a generational thing, just like you said about the all in the family thing and the body expectations at that time. I remember when I came to the National Institutes of Health and began my work with body comp, that it was very funny. My older male colleagues, God bless them all, basically assumed, I'm not even kidding, they assumed that women just sort of spread out after the age of 50, and that it's like a normal thing to develop a belly full of visceral fat, and then, of course, you know, increasing your risk for heart disease and diabetes and cancer. And I, you know, corrected them rather forcefully and said, nah, wrong answer. You know, this is why I'm here. I'd like to look at this. So you're doing the same thing with, you know, female sexual health. And you're saying, wait a minute now, let's put this all into context. One thing you brought up that's so important is that evolutionarily, we were really built for obsolescence by the age of 50. And this is a known fact. And this is why our spines start bending forward, why, you know, everything basically goes to pot, more ways than one, after the age of 50. And so what you have to do is put more, as it were, work into it. And that's what I throw up to you now, to explain what that work is, because you cannot, I mean, again, help me understand this. You're an expert in the perimenopause, you know, postmenopause, female sexual health. What is the expectation of a woman who is now, you know, beginning to enter perimenopause, menopause, and in terms of relating to and comparing to what she felt like sexually when she was 20, 30, even 40? What is a realistic expectation of her libido, her interest, all the rest of it?
Thank you. That's a fantastic question. And I love answering this. And I think the first one is really having a good understanding of what is happening to your body. Okay. So first things first, your estrogen level and your testosterone level is declining. It started declining years before menopause actually happened. And menopause, by definition, and a lot of people don't understand this because they'll say, oh, I'm in menopause 10 years after they've actually stopped their period. So perimenopause is everything leading up to that 1 year where you don't have a period. So you know you're in menopause when you've gone 1 year without a period. You know, you're having symptoms, all of those things that go along with menopause. Perimenopause are the years leading up to that where you have irregular periods, you're skipping, you're having symptoms. And then everything after that 1 year with no period where you've hit menopause, you are postmenopausal. So the misunderstanding by a lot of women is that that libido drops and all that weight gain happens and everything happens right at that 12-month mark. It doesn't. It happens in the year building up. So I think the first thing is to understand what your body is going through, what is normal, and say, okay, I understand. My hormones are changing. My libido is low. I'm having vaginal dryness. Sex has now become painful. What am I going to do about that? Let's start. I'm going to actually take this to the vaginal dryness, painful intercourse issue, which is the majority of women will experience what's now called genitourinary syndrome of menopause. Dryness, pain, irritation, frequent urinary tract infections. That's related, mostly related to low estrogen levels because the vagina needs estrogen. How do you combat that? Well, if you want to maintain sexual activity, it's important that you, one, talk to your doctor. But if you don't, let's say you don't have the resources, you know, not everybody's insured, not everybody has the ability to go and speak to a clinician about this. One place that you can start, one thing that you can do is use what's called a silicone-based sexual lubricant or personal lubricant. There are many different lubricants out there. There's the most common and the most affordable are the water-based. But I'm going to tell you right now, for a woman who's got vaginal dryness related to estrogen levels being low, oftentimes water-based is not enough. So I say just go to the pharmacy or the supermarket, get yourself a silicone-based lubricant. If you don't want to do that, maybe you can't afford it. Try just something you have in your pantry. Go grab some olive oil. Grab coconut oil. As long as you're not using latex condoms, you can use one of the natural oils as a lubricant, and that can really help. And a lot of people want to go the more natural route. The only thing I would say, again, if you're using latex items, don't use the natural oils. Silicone lubricants are safe. So that's an easy fix. If that's not enough, then it's a conversation that has to happen with your clinician where you say, or your healthcare provider, and you say, I'm having this dryness, sex is painful, I tried this better lubricant, what other options do I have? Because there are things like vaginal estrogen therapy, local estrogen therapy, which is the most effective treatment for genitourinary syndrome of menopause. It helps with those common bacterial infections or urinary tract infections and pain. Even women who have had breast cancer may be candidates for vaginal estrogen therapy. The American College of OBGYN just put out a statement in March saying, yes, it is a possibility. It's a conversation that an OBGYN should have with that woman's oncologist, but it is an option for women who have failed other treatments. There are non-hormonal vaginal moisturizers. So there are these things that you can do before you get to the doctor. So I would recommend try a non-hormonal vaginal moisturizer, which you can buy over the counter, and try a silicone-based lubricant. If that's not enough,
well, you also have another really great resource that I know that you had some fingers in creating, and that is a really nice website, which is called findmyspark.com. That's findmyspark.com. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so findmyspark.com is a great collaborative effort between the American Sexual Health Association, expert in the field of sexual medicine, and it was supported by Valiant Pharmaceuticals. And the reason why this is such a great website is because, one, it is the information is evidence-based. It's basically educating women on female sexual dysfunction, whether it's painful intercourse, hypoactive sexual desire disorder, orgasm issues, or pain issues, or arousal issues. So it is, it's got tips about how to talk to your clinician. It gives you a quiz that you can identify whether you're at risk for sexual dysfunction, whether you may have it. There are videos from experts. It's just a great place to go where you can get accurate information and you can take the information, go to your clinician, and you can say, listen, I saw this on a website. I have questions about my own sexual function. So it's a great tool to get that conversation started between a woman and her clinician.
I think that this is fabulous. I had scrolled through this knowing, of course, I was going to be talking with you, and it's very comprehensive. The videos are wonderful with the experts. They're just chock full of great information, but most importantly, it's really at a woman's level, meaning that it's not a bunch of gobbledygook from science. It's more like, hey, we get it with you. Good grief. I mean, there's some really interesting things from the surveys that are mentioned on the website. For instance, in a survey, women ranked having a healthy sex life higher than career satisfaction, home ownership, traveling, and social life. Good heavens. And that's a big thing. I mean, we got to take this seriously. So between you and me as fellow physicians, you know, we need to make certain to get our brethren on board with all of this. And at the very least, refer them to a resource like this so they can help their patients get the level of knowledge that they need to make appropriate decisions one way or the other, because there's a full spectrum of treatments that we can't go into completely here that they really need to be aware of. They also need to know that they're not strange or something's not, you know, going completely awry in their bodies and lives, that this is a common type of phenomenon and experience on the part of women, certainly as they're coursing through the perimenopause and menopause. But as I mentioned with the national survey to start with, a lot of women as early as, you know, the age of 20 are also experiencing issues. And I think that they're hesitant to bring it up for a lot of reasons that you and I already talked about. So, you know, I think it's time to open up that dialogue, get the discussion going, and then, you know, hope and pray that marvelous researchers and physicians like yourself will continue to generate the kind of science and evidence-based science that will help all of us to be able to really open up this field. Let's get the dialogues going, and let's help a heck of a lot more women. What do you think? What are your thoughts about that as sort of a wrap to our wonderful interview here?
Yeah, I think absolutely. You know, women's sexual function is incredibly important to them. Women of all ages, it affects their relationship, their lives, their work, their interactions with their peers, their body image, their self-esteem. So when you brought up that it's more important sometimes than even their work or home ownership, it's women oftentimes define themselves by their sexuality. It makes them feel like who they are as a woman. It's important to them, not just their partners, but to them. And so I would say, definitely, if you have concerns, please go to findmyspark.com, at least to get some tools that will help you open up a dialogue with your clinician. You're not alone. 44% of women in this country have a sexual concern. That's almost half the women in this country. And about 12% have sexual dysfunction. So you're not alone. So go. First step, go to Find My Spark. Second step, go talk to your doctor.
I love it. This has just been a fabulous, incredibly informative interview, and I really appreciate the work that you've put into your own career on this, and thank heavens for pioneers like yourself, because Lord knows we need it. And as a physician, I thank you for being able to help all of us, professionals and patients alike, be able to expand our own knowledge about this whole issue of female sexual dysfunction, or as I say, no more mercy sex, please. We need to be able to optimize our own sexual health, and by doing so, certainly enhance our life. Dr. Milhauser, thank you so much. Everyone, we've been talking to Dr. Leah Milhauser of Stanford University, all about female dysfunction, female sexual dysfunction. It's so terribly important that as of now, from this moment on out, we take this seriously. Hey, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds and rate this podcast on iTunes. And this is because we want to attract a lot more people just like you to the show. And that happens when you take the time to rate it. While you're at it, can you please leave a review as well? Just remember, we read these, and I love to hear from you. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. And you can also check out our Her show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.